As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to the 11 Personnel Podcast, your favorite Rams podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Rodrigue, and with me, as always, my fabulous co-host, Rich Hammond. Rich,
how we doing?
Yeah, nice quiet weekend. I was just sitting at home on a Saturday night, you know, going through Netflix. I was actually on the last 20 minutes of The Queen's Gambit, which I was far behind on, and I thought, ooh, this is building to a very exciting conclusion, and then something happened, Jordan, on Saturday night. How was your Saturday night?
Slow.
Until.
Yeah, you know, it was interesting. Okay, so Rams fans, if you have been living under a rock and have not heard the news, the Rams have changed quarterbacks. Or they've agreed to change quarterbacks. So this is the first big blockbuster trade of the 2021 season / 2021 off season. And this cannot be made official. Here's a quick caveat. This trade cannot be made official or commented on publicly by the team or league officials until the start of the 2021 league year. But we are here for you to break it all down in lieu of their absence. So basically, here's how it's going to go. The Rams are going to send Jared Goff a first-round draft pick in 2022 and 2023 and a 2021 third-round pick to Detroit in exchange for Matthew Stafford. Rich, what was your initial reaction seeing that? Because I know you have covered Jared since the start.
Right.
And it felt to me like just to wrap your head around what was happening was quite a task.
It was, even though we had come to expect it almost. Yeah. I mean, Jordan, you did such a great job in the previous days. I mean, you had a story on our website and our app on Friday kind of foretelling this, you know, that saying the Rams were actively talking to multiple teams. So it wasn't a surprise, but it was still a shock. I don't know if that's a good way to put it or not, whether that makes sense. But to actually see the tweet come across that said the Rams have traded Jared Goff, it still was one of those I had to look at three times and say, does that say what I think it says? Like, even though we had known that it was a possibility, maybe even by that point a probability, based on the things that you had heard and reported, it was still a shock to me, you know, to know this journey that they had been on with Jared Goff for the last 5 years and how much his drafting was celebrated in 2016 and the heights that this team achieved with him going to the Super Bowl just 2 years ago. To see that happen, it kind of felt like the Todd Gurley thing again, where it was like you kind of knew it was coming, but when you saw it, it was still a shock.
Yeah, and I remember talking to you. We were talking on Friday evening after I put out that story where I had gotten tipped off that multiple teams were engaged in conversations with the Rams about a possible trade market for Jared. this was not the only, the Lions were not the only team that they were having conversations with about Jared Goff and the possibilities that they could explore with the trade. The fact that there it had already escalated to multiple teams meant that it was probably going to happen quickly. Now, 7 p.m. on a Saturday night, did not think it would be that quickly. I was thinking more of a Sunday news dump situation. But I remember, you know, in our Slack channel, Rich, we were like, it feels eerie out there. Like, the air feels weird. It feels like something's happening. Something's going to happen. So then you start poking around, and then, you know, Adam Schefter broke the news, and then we confirmed the news on Saturday night, shortly after the trade was agreed to. And then you start putting all the pieces together. You know, you start making the phone calls and following up on information that you'd been gathering for months and months and months, and Rich, in your case, for years, and putting it all together. And so I hope you guys go read my column over on theathletic.com, because there are some things in that column that I think we really need to talk about. And we will get to them, but like, we really got to talk about these things as a collective group, guys. But it's so the trade itself is so interesting, not just the timing of it. I mean, it's a first round picks, basically player pick swap of first rounders before the Super Bowl. You know, that in itself is interesting. The fact that there was an extra first round pick thrown into the deal to sweeten the fact that the Lions would have to assume Jared's contract, which hadn't, the extension of which hadn't even started yet, because it starts in the new league year. So he basically, they're getting a fresh bankroll contract over there, and the Rams will absorb about $22 million in dead money, you know, plus they have the $8 million from Todd Gurley still left over, and then we'll assume Matt Stafford's new contract. And but those are just the bones of it. There's so much, right, that has gone on, and there's so much that sort of swirls around it in terms of analysis and possibility. And it's just a fascinating trade, in my opinion.
Yeah, it is, for sure. And to me, I separate two things. I separate the trade from the how did we get here.
Yeah,
because the trade itself, I totally get it. You wrote this very well in your column. The Rams obviously see a window here. They have so many of these top guys under contract for the next 3 or 4 seasons, and they felt like they needed an upgrade at quarterback. So I don't blame them for that. That's a very reasonable, rational thing to decide, and you feel like you have to make that big trade, and maybe it's worth giving up an extra first-round pick because you think you can win a Super Bowl if you make an upgrade at quarterback. So I don't blame them for that, and I don't blame them for making the trade. The problem that I have is a little bit of the process of how you get from 2016 to 2019, giving a guy $134 million, a record amount of guaranteed money, a year before you need to sign him.
Right.
And then 17 months later saying, you know what? This isn't really our guy. Let's get another guy. I have a problem with that process, and maybe even what it says about, you know, the decision making that went on there. But again, I think those are two separate issues. And the Rams did what they thought they needed to do. The timing of it did surprise me a little bit, Jordan. But then you hear, as you did, and you know, through some of our reporting over the weekend, there was quite a market for Matthew Stafford, it seems like. And this was not going to go on for a long time. This was not something that was going to be drawn out for months. And I would assume the Detroit Lions didn't have any interest in having it drawn out for a few months. And I don't blame them for that. So this was going to happen one way or the other. It was, you know, the Rams are going to get Matthew Stafford, or he was going to go somewhere else. So when you see it in that context, it makes a lot of sense. He probably, all things considered, was the best fit for them. I know people were really excited about the possibility of Deshaun Watson. I don't know whether the Rams would have been able to make that deal. It probably would have been a little bit more difficult. So it was the right move, and it was the one they thought they needed to make, and I don't blame them for that. But I am also very curious about this whole process.
Yeah, so on the surface, this trade, just its structure itself, it shows that the Rams, first and foremost, it shows a lot of things. And like I said in my column, the things that it shows are not mutually exclusive. So we can hold them together in separate sections in our brain at one time, and they can all be true at various points, right?
Right.
So the Rams believe they have a Super Bowl caliber roster, minus a couple of pieces they need to improve. And we're going to get into those in a separate podcast. But
oh, yeah.
They have guys who are entering their prime or in their prime. And in their prime, I would say Aaron Donald, Robert Woods, probably Cooper Kupp, considering his age. They have a guy in Jalen Ramsey who is entering his prime years. And then they have Andrew Whitworth, who is, you know, still can play very well, but, you know, logically is kind of on the exit of his prime, right? And these are the guys that they are trying to win a Super Bowl with. And so if they felt, you know, this is the classic if-then scientific hypothetical statement. If they felt that these guys can win them a Super Bowl, and they also felt that they were a quarterback away from winning a Super Bowl or getting to another Super Bowl, which as we started to learn and have been digging and learning about over the last several months, that's how they felt. Then the logical decision was for them to go out and get a quarterback who they believed, first of all, was gettable, achievable to get, and then who they knew would want to come to California and play for them, which Matt Stafford very much did and made it clear to the Lions that he wanted to play for Sean McVay and for the Rams. And that was a very much a factor in this trade from the Lions side. And they went out and got the guy who they believe they can align. First of all, the base of his contract is for 2 years. So for the next 2 years minimum, they may tack on a quick extension on that contract because it will make the front end of it a lot more workable against sort of this cap strain that they're dealing with. So it could be 2 years, it could be three. And right. That aligns, as Stafford is 33, 34, 35, that aligns him with these guys that they have in their prime. And they clearly have gone all in on this. And so that's what this trade sort of shows on the surface. This is the goal that is left to be achieved.
Yeah, and from a purely football standpoint, I think that makes a ton of sense. I mean, they've weighed the risks of what they've done in trading away an extra draft pick and in incurring some dead cap, and they've measured that versus, well, what are we gaining? We're gaining a quarterback who we think can put us over the top, who we think can win us the Super Bowl. And that really is, you know, your windows are so narrow. And if you have a chance, you know, if you have a 3 or 4 year window here, you have to take advantage of it. And it's fascinating, Jordan, what Matthew Stafford will bring to this offense. You mentioned it a little bit in your column. His skill set certainly very different from Jared Goff. I mean, do you see at this point them really transforming this offense dramatically around Matthew Stafford, or will it just be allow Sean McVay to kind of put in those little tweaks, those little nuances that can make a difference that maybe Jared wasn't quite as adept at pulling off?
Well, I think we actually caught like a glimpse of the blueprint. I'm fascinated by this because I think we caught a glimpse of what this offense will look like under Matt Stafford when it was being run by John Walford, for better or for worse, in week 17. And I'm not talking about the stat sheet, and I'm not talking about the red zone stalls. I'm talking about the core of his play, the details of his play, as he was driving the ball down the field. You know, John Walford, undrafted free agent, going to be the Rams' backup. There's going to be a competition at backup quarterback to see which guys they can install into change of pace packages a la Taysom Hill this spring and summer, by the way, which is an exciting side note. But now I'm going to get back on track here, but I'm just excited about it. John Walford obviously comes in, undrafted free agent. McVay loves him because, you know, yes, the broadcast that week loved to say, oh, he reminds him of himself. And maybe he does, and they look weirdly similar, but it's also, it was about how quickly John Walford processed through his progressions. It was how he saw the field, how he found throwing lanes despite being drastically undersized, how he was able to move his pocket around, how he was able to move within that pocket, how he was able to, you know, avoid pressure and reset certain launch points in order to continue the play development downfield. You saw longer developing plays. You saw more layers within the intermediate and the longer parts of the field. You saw him getting the ball to those guys instead of opting for the higher probability, shorter passing attack. When he saw the look he wanted, you saw smart decision making. You saw, you know, other than that first throw, which I know people love to bring that up. This very first NFL throw was a pick six, but we'll maybe forgive him for that one. And, you know, it was not like it was a sign of what was possible. Like John, the Rams, if they couldn't find a trade market, they were very, very okay with having John Walford compete with Jared Goff and possibly even benching Jared Goff at the start of the 2021 season. Because of the way, the little flashes they saw of the way this offense could be run, right? And This isn't a knock on Jared, who has, I think, some quality skills that do make him, you know, appealing to some systems. And he's got arm strength. He is very, very even keel. He's been remarkably durable throughout his career. You know, the thing is that the way that Sean now has needed to adjust and run his offense, and the way that he saw it, flashes of it, the ability of it to be run under a player with a similar skill set. Now we dial it up to being first overall pick caliber Matt Stafford skill set, and that was appealing to them. And so I think that when we talk and probably no design runs, I would imagine, but when we talk about what the offense is going to look like, I think you can extrapolate like the pieces of those, of that Arizona Cardinals game when he was driving the ball downfield, extrapolate that first Seattle drive that he was really getting the ball going downfield. And that, I think, is what you're going to see this offense kind of take after. I think that provided a small piece of the blueprint for what is happening now and what will happen moving forward.
Yeah, I agree. I have a little bit of an issue with the idea that Sean McVay just couldn't come up with an offense that worked for Jared Goff. And maybe that'll be borne out. And maybe, you know, obviously Jared's going to go to Detroit. It certainly looks, based on every factor, as though he's going to start there. So we'll see. We'll see what it looks like under a different coaching staff and a different whatever. I just push back a little bit on the idea that, well, they just, you know, just kind of threw up our hands. Like, well, there's nothing we can do with Jared anymore. We tried. You know, it wasn't that long ago, and I know I don't want to pivot too quickly right now, but it wasn't too long ago that Sean McVay made a big commitment to Jared Goff. It was just 17 months ago where he had basically said that this is my guy. I mean, he said it. He didn't basically say it. He said it directly. This is my guy. There's no problem. We're on the same page. Everything, like, all this public. And then now, 17 months later, all of a sudden it's, I can't run this offense. And, you know, it's you had the quote in your column today. It was from Sean's exit interview a couple of weeks ago, where you talked about the changes that they made to the offense this year and trying to simplify things and trying to go to those higher percentage plays. And the quote that you had from Sean was, "That's not the world I want to live in." And I get that, but I there's a part of me that thinks it's your responsibility as a coach to figure this out. It's almost like you bought it, you own it, you fix it. And I don't really understand how it's just okay to kind of go along with, well, we couldn't figure it out with Jared, so, you know, we're moving on now. Well, you did just give him $134 million 17 months ago with the idea, with the commitment that he was your guy and that you could figure this out. And now you're a year and a half later, you're just kind of throwing up your hands and saying, well, and got to move on, got to get Matthew Stafford in here. So On a wins and losses and the desire to win a Super Bowl ring, I totally get it. I do. But it's just the process of that is a little bit confusing to me.
Yeah, I think to me, certain things are true at the same time. Like, I think that extending him early was a terrible decision. And I think that, you know, there are pieces of it that I understand from their perspective, in that they believed that by the time the contract started, it would be mid-level quarterback money, and Jared would be performing at least a top 15 as a floor or higher at that point. So at that point, you know, considering other extensions that would be happening around the league, young guys getting extended, certain trades, things like that, I can see that. But you didn't have to do it early. You know, the market for Jared, I mean, you already started to see sort of him hit his peak at a certain point, right? So you didn't necessarily have to do it a year early, and I thought that was a bad decision. So that to me is a truth that I hold, but also I also hold the truth that if you're a head coach and you do believe that you have given this guy every opportunity to succeed 2019 and 2020, and even changed your offense away from certain things that you like to do, and I've covered this quite extensively throughout the course of this season, but for first-time listeners, want to reiterate very quickly, you did not see Jared Goff pass the ball deep very often this season. In fact, was one of the worst completion percentages and attempts, lowest attempts in the league in terms of that deep passing game. And there was a reason for that. The Rams adjusted. So understanding that those deeper passes are 50-50 plays, 50% probability success rate. Okay. And then the probability success rate increases the closer air yards you get to the line of scrimmage. So a mid-range is, you know, what, 75%, like if we're just throwing blanket estimations, 75%, a short range route's like what, 85 to 90%. And then you factor in, can the receiver hit a good catch point? What's his window? How does he run routes? All of these different things, right? But basically the probability of a successful play, just completing a successful play increases the shorter passes you throw, right? Well, Jared Goff was turning the ball over in 2019, and he was also the defenses around the league were, and this was the sense within the building. It's not me postulating. This was the sense within the building that defenses were starting to solve Sean's offense. So it's an adapt or die league. So he tried to adjust. Well, at the same time, you also are adjusting for the fact that your quarterback is not taking care of the football. So you have to now shift toward higher probability plays, aka shorter yards per attempt, shortest yards per attempt in Jared's career this year. You also have to rely on catch and run players like Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp, which they smartly capitalized on in contract negotiations this year because they knew how valuable they were to this shift, among other reasons. And you knew you were going to rely on them for explosives, and you were going to be pretty dependent on having a consistent run game that could also be explosive, especially on first and second down. All of those things have to be perfect, right? All of those things have to execute well. And the thing that started to shift was, first of all, Sean McVay did not necessarily want to run his offense that way, because he wants to get the ball downfield a little bit. And he even said so when I asked him, you quoted it earlier, Rich, when I asked him about personnel and adjusting his offense to that higher probability sort of concept line. And he was like, that's not the world I want to live in. And I want to get back toward explosive plays. And so when you factor in the idea that you are changing and you're moving things and you're shifting and you're trying to build up the resources and the tools around this guy. Now, this is a perspective from inside the building. It's not like I'm knocking the guy. I'm not knocking Jared at all. But then that guy keeps turning the football over, even though you have put, you know, these tools and change things for him, even as the defenses have started to figure out how exactly to defend you. And people around the league have told me, if you take away, you know, one or two of those things that I just mentioned, or you, you know, force a longer second down and a longer third down by stopping the run on first down, or by, you know, hassling Jared on first down in the passing game, you can, they are, and I quote, easy to defend.
Right.
Like, right. That's, you cannot have that as a coach if you want to win in this league. And so, you know, assuming all of those things and assuming that perspective, the turnovers that continued, and it's not the stats of the turnover, it's the way that they would happen in terms of poor decision making, lack of processing, the fumbles, especially bad sacks that were taken and turned into fumbles, things like that. It's the way that they happened. So we have to, you know, approach this with nuance, because it's like, no, I mean, yeah, I think on paper it sucks to commit to a guy and then 17 months later kick him, you know, to another team for a guy who you've deemed as an upgrade. No, that does not look great. It doesn't look great at all. However, all the gray area in between is that this has been a developing situation for the last 2 years, and it's not for lack of attempting to bring certain people along with that change. And once it became clear that that was not going to happen, the disconnect really started, the tension really started, and the decision was made, and there was really no turning back from it.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Yeah, I think the tension is the key thing there that really, you know, kind of escalated this thing and just maybe certain and that cuts both ways. I'm not saying, you know, Jared's tension with Sean or Sean's tension with Jared. I mean, I'm talking about it, the relationship in general. So I think that escalates it. The only issue I understand I annoy people by going into this, and I'm sorry, I'm not trying to annoy you, I swear, and I will let it go after I make the point one more time here. But I guess my problem is that there's a lot of talk among Rams fans and people in general about, well, Jared regressed. Like, this is the problem. He regressed. He's not as good as he was 2 years ago. I don't think that's necessarily true. Has he regressed in certain areas? Yeah, I think it's fair to say. Or maybe he hasn't progressed the way that he should have. But go back and read some of the things that were written about Jared Goff at Cal. Read some of the things that scouting reports. I mean, I tweeted one this morning from Doug Farr, who was at Sports Illustrated at the Times, and you read them. And if you didn't know what year it was written, you might not know. If you read some of the weaknesses, I'm not going to read the whole thing, but some of them are, Goff's clock speeds up under pressure and he's more inclined to throw the ball away than he is to reset and make the open throw. Processing speed under pressure needs to be developed. A see-it-and-throw-it player who makes too many predetermined reads and can't always adjust, has a target in mind from the snap and isn't flexible enough to adjust. And I'm sitting here going, this is exactly what if you were going to criticize Jared Goff in 2020, these are exactly the things that you would say about him. And they were the same things that people were saying about him in 2016. And I guess my point is that I think in 2017 and 2018, they were able to accentuate his positives because Sean McVay did an excellent job with his offensive scheme. The Rams front office did an excellent job of building that offensive line and bringing in some skill position players. They accentuated his positives and were able to cover up his negatives. And I think what you've seen here over the last couple of years is they've been doing that's been happening less. The offensive scheme, I'm not saying Sean is any less of a coach. I don't think that's true. But as you've said, and many others have said, teams are adjusting to his offensive scheme. The personnel has changed. It's not quite what it was. It's certainly different. You can argue better or worse, but it's certainly different. And I think all of that has impacted Jared Goff. So has he really regressed? Or is he basically the same guy who he was, but you're not able to surround him with that environment that he needs to thrive?
Yeah.
I tend to think that's more of what it is. And if that's what it is, then why did you pay him? Like, why if you kind of knew who he was and you knew that things had to be perfect around him and eventually things aren't going to be perfect. Just that's just life. That's the NFL. Things aren't going to be perfect all the time. So if that's your guy and that's really who he was the whole time, then why make that commitment? And I know it's irrelevant right now. I'm arguing a point that isn't going to change anything. But it's just I don't really see this as like a celebration of like, yay, the Rams got out under this, you know, contract. Well, how did they get here? Is a question that I think is fair to answer. So I don't know. Again, all of that is probably irrelevant, but I just wonder, you know, whether or not it that's who Jared Goff just was the entire time.
You know, and it's to me, I wonder if at the time it was a little hubris even because Sean McVay's offense was tough to solve.
Yeah.
Until he ran up against a Vic Fangio system. And right, I think right. You see now the ego checks. Right? Because you saw the ego check, the front office pivoted from the Todd Gurley, Brandon Cooks contracts, they taking on ridicule and dead money, right? And that's an ego check. They're never going to pay a running back again. that's an ego check. They pivoted even more deeply to this model that we will, you know, get into in a little bit more in depth about the draft picks and things like that. In terms of rounds 2 through 6 and really, really bulking up there in terms of getting really solid starters and around these core contracts, that's a little bit of an ego check, realizing you probably kind of suck at picking first round players. Like that's an ego check. And I think in Sean's case, bringing in a guy who runs the Vic Fangio system as your defensive coordinator, a little bit of an ego check, right? and learning it and trying to understand how could I have been wrong about my own system and getting the crap kicked out of you the first week of training camp and being pissed and coming back and trying to solve the thing that had solved him, right?
Right.
I think that we can't, I still will always think, along with you, Rich, that it was the contract was a bad idea. But I think we can't have it exist in a vacuum necessarily because nothing about any of this will ever be black and white or simple. It's all going to have so much gray to it. And part of that gray is human beings do not evolve at the same rate. And I do agree that Jared Goff, I wouldn't even say maybe regression is the right word because as everything else had to change around him and everything else adjusted around him and defenses learned him and things had to change. I think he stayed a very similar guy to who I think we thought that he was.
Right.
And that was a very successful player in certain phases of his career and could be again. So please don't think I'm knocking the guy.
Right.
You know, I hope the best for him and in Detroit. But human beings do not evolve at the same rate. And some human beings, and I put Sean McVay in this category, are positively manic about adjusting and evolving at a rapid rate. Because if he does not, he is not going to win and he's not keeping his job. So he is like the guy who, it's almost like this is me psychologically speculating here, just as a caveat. It's almost a projection of, I'm doing this and I'm evolving at this rate. I lobbied for you for this contract and I, you know, wanted to get you paid, expecting that you would come with me in this mental evolving process.
Right.
You are not. I'm now here and you are back there. And then, you know, perhaps on Jared's side thinking, what the hell, man? You said I never had to play outside myself. Asking me to do this now is me playing outside myself. And right. And then it simplifies, right? We see that here this year. Everything simplifies down and the turnovers still happen. And those, again, guys, like that, I probably can't adequately express how much those needled at Sean McVay.
Right. Right.
Because it wasn't the fact that they were happening. It was the way that they were happening. With a, you know, okay, I, you know, it's just, and this is all psychological speculation, right? But it's like, it's the dynamic here is that you cannot stay the same in this league if you want to build a sustainably successful franchise in a modern league. And that's how Sean McVay runs his business. That's how he runs his team. The front office is all in on Sean McVay specifically. It's not Jared Goff. If Sean McVay makes a decision about certain partnerships, certain marriages with players and presents his point to this sort of upper level hierarchy, they are all in on getting him what he needs that he feels he needs to be successful. And whether we'll look back at this and say, you know, how, like, what the heck, you know, how could you just try to pivot so rapidly like that? Whether we look back at it and say, oh my God, that was a disaster. Or we look back on it and say, the Rams were one of the early teams to really try to be fluid, like, you know, in an NBA-esque way and pivot away from mistakes and try to, you know, recognize when they were essentially quote unquote wrong and seek answers for when they're wrong. It really depends on who you ask out there and depends on what, you know, NFL channel you turn on. and it really is, to me, like I said in my column, one of my columns earlier this week, this whole situation is like a Rorschach test for how you view football, what you believe in, and what you think is a successful and sustainable winning model in football.
Yeah, and I'm glad you made the point about Sean and the you know, the way the Rams view things is the other thing I see a lot on Twitter is a lot of dumping on Les Snead, and I think people need to kind of understand that it is the Rams front office in a general sense is very collaborative. So when people say, oh, it's Les Snead making these mistakes, it's Les Snead doing that. No, you know, obviously he's the general manager. It's his, you know, signature that goes on the line, but he's not making these decisions without Sean McVay's input or in some cases probably his outright approval. And he's not handling a lot of the money situations. I mean, the Rams have people for that, you know, in the front office, and Tony Pastore's, you know, doing the actual numbers and the actual negotiations, things like that. So to pin it all on one person, I think is a little unfair. And I'm not saying you should pin it on one other person. I'm saying it is a collaborative effort. I mean exactly what I'm saying. It's a collaborative effort among all of these people. So to the extent that you're going to give out praise, or you're going to give out blame, I think it should go across the board. But Jordan, I think you made a great point there about the, you know, the pivots. And I'll start by giving a great example of that, and is that Sean McVay pivoted away from Wade Phillips a year ago. And there were a lot of people, myself included, maybe even myself at the top of the list, who were concerned that that was a mistake, because I thought, wow, Wade Phillips, he's one of the smartest defensive minds who's ever been around. The Rams defense was not terrible. It was an average to maybe even above average defense. And they took a big swing on that. And that was a good example of Sean McVay saying, we have to pivot right now. We have to, we're I see an area where we can get better. It's a big risk to take on Brandon Staley, but it's something that we need to do. And guess what? It worked out very, very well. And that was a very smart decision by Sean McVay, and one that really carried the Rams as far as they went this season, to 10 wins and to the divisional round of the playoffs. I just think it's a little bit different when you're talking about players, because the way that the league is set up, you can pivot, and obviously the Rams have done it here a couple times in cutting Todd Gurley, trading Brandon Cooks, trading Jared Goff now. I mean, you can do these things, but I just wonder how many times can you make these pivots before they start to catch up with you? Because what it does, it makes that tightrope so narrow that you have to do everything else right. Can you trade Jared Goff? Can you absorb that cap hit? Yeah, you can do it. Can you lose that first round pick? Yeah, you can do it. But it just means you have to be pretty much letter perfect on everything else that you do. And look, maybe that's worth it. And maybe they keep pulling these rabbits out of their hat. And Jordan, I know you want to talk, and I do too, about their philosophy on the draft. And I think that plays into it also. And I totally understand that. But it's just kind of like, wow, you know, making these huge pivots with personnel. I just wonder how many times you can go to that well, and how many times you can do it before it eventually bites you.
Yeah. And I'm kind of like, I think I'm kind of in the camp of like, you know, I cut my teeth in the NFL at a very traditionally run franchise, very conservative, you know, we don't really get into the bidding in free agency. We're not aggressive in that regard. We're trying to keep our core around. We've got, you know, some cap issues and some things tied up into big contracts, but nothing crazy. You know, we don't, other than when this new regime took over, there wasn't anything really. It was like, we're always going to have a first round pick. We don't trade up. We don't trade back. Like, just it was very methodical and traditionalist, I think. I'm kind of in the camp where I'm like, it's almost like the Rams are saying, just because it hasn't been proven to work because nobody else has done it, doesn't mean that we don't think it's going to work. And to me, that's interesting, because the Rams, you know, despite the market that they're in, they don't get a lot of chatter. They don't get a lot of sort of scrutiny, even though they have like all of these stars on their roster. You know, they don't sort of project this type of thing. Like, they're at Sloan every year. They're doing the MIT thing and all of that. They don't really project like,
right,
we're the, you know, the outlaws of the league or whatever. Like, they don't do any of that bullshit, right? So it's almost, you almost like, it surprises you when something like this comes up, right? And then you're like, oh, actually, they did that before. They did that with Jalen Ramsey. And, oh, yeah, they also dumped the Gurley and Cooks contracts. And, oh, yeah, they did. And I think that part of it's interesting, right? And I'm, you know, as a journalist, it's fascinating to cover, because it's an experiment. It's a grand experiment. And, you know, these guys they've kept their front office, other than, you know, losing Brad Holmes to Detroit and Ray Agnew to Detroit. Like, they've kept their front office intact. So these are the same guys who are making the mistakes, quote unquote, if that's the right word for it, making the mistakes and then pivoting from the mistakes. Yeah. And I think that's a fascinating thing, because, you know, I've covered GMs in the past, and Dave Gettleman comes to mind with the Josh Norman franchise tag fiasco, where you just never pivot away from something like that. And you just keep doing those same types of things. And you know, I think that that's really, really fascinating. Again, I don't know if it's going to work. I think that you have a small sample size of proof that it can in this season, in terms of carrying all of that dead money and having no first round picks and having, you know, the fruits of those picks be brought in via player. In Jalen Ramsey, and having the new defensive coordinator. And, you know, I think you could, because they were they could have been very special this year, I think, with that defense. Right. And And so it's almost like you're seeing that it can work, but it's such a small sample size. And it's really interesting. It's almost like when they find a thread that they think is a good thread, they just pull at it as hard as they can. And it's almost like what I was saying earlier about the John Walford stuff on a different recording. It's like the offense will they caught a whiff of what a good blueprint for the way that Sean McVay wants to run this offense. It is. They caught it, a very small sample size of it, from how, right, you know, little John Walford ran that offense. Not the red zone. Again, I'll repeat, not the red zone stuff, not the lack of points, not the interception, the way that some of those drives were sustained and some of the ways that he operated out of structure, some of the ways that he operated that offense. They caught a whiff of that small sample size, and everything had been brewing and boiling and bubbling behind the scenes since 2019, which I cover in my column. And they were like, here's our thread. Let's yank on it. Like, it's right, just so fast. Like, I know I sound like probably one, like, just I'm delving into, like, I know people want to hear facts and data and I'm delving into philosophy, but like philosophically, fascinating stuff.
Yeah, and it is. And the reason why you mentioned that front office, you know, staying together, and the reason why is because it's worked. I mean, they've been on this high wire now for a while, really for the last 5 years. I mean, when you go back to the Goff trade in 2016, where they give up a lot of draft capital. I mean, that might not have worked. As it turns out, it did. They got to the Super Bowl. You know, they give up another first rounder for Brandon Cooks, and that, of course, being the year that they did make the Super Bowl. They give up two first round picks for Jalen Ramsey, and like you said, small sample size, but he was arguably the best cornerback in the NFL this year. You can make an argument for that. So it really is like, I agree, it is fascinating, and I would much rather be around a team that is interesting like this than a team that is boring. But the other thing is, it's so far, it has worked. I mean, there have been, you know, missteps here and there, or maybe things that could have done better. But you can't argue with the track record since 2017. I mean, the 10-win seasons, playoff appearances, making the Super Bowl, you know, you can nitpick here and there, but the 4-year run of success is you know, very good, for especially considering all the risks that they've taken. So I'm sure from the Rams' perspective, they look at it and say, well, this is how we do things, and we are going to be bold, and we are going to take these chances, and we have confidence in ourselves that it's going to continue to work out. And it very well may. There's plenty of evidence to suggest that it will. But I just think the more that you play with that fire, you know, the more you risk having something blow up in your face. And I'm not saying that I hope that happens. I don't. But it's just they have taken a lot of these risks, and so far they've played out fairly well. But yeah, I tell you what, if this one doesn't go right, then I don't know. I mean, if the Rams continue the success, if they win the division, go back to the playoffs the next couple of years, that's fine. But if this leads to any kind of a downturn, then I just start to wonder about what that means.
The Rams are the great Greek tragedy. They're not even Shakespearean. I'd say the Panthers were Shakespearean because of all the drama. But the Rams are the Greek tragedy of the NFL. They were Sisyphean. I can never say that right in the first try.
That was good.
They were Sisyphean in their efforts to roll the boulder up the hill via the defense, only for that boulder to fall down the hill and have to start over via the offense all 2020. One could argue they were Sisyphean in their structure of handling this Jared Goff situation as well. And now we're looking at Icarus. Or maybe they're trying to avoid that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe we're looking at Icarus. Maybe we're not. And time will tell. And I just think that strategically and philosophically, it's so interesting. And then Rich, like, it gets into like their draft strategy too, and it kind of is,
I was just going to bring this up.
Yeah, interesting how they all marry together, isn't it?
It really is, and it, again, just kind of the unconventional, or the, you know, we're going to zig where everybody else zags, and the draft strategy. Because Jordan, I don't want to steal your thunder. You explained this very well in your column, and I know we've talked about it before in the past. But you know, the value that the Rams put on certain picks, or you know, where they might pick if they have a successful season, and is it worth Jalen Ramsey, for instance, right? They trade Jalen Ramsey for two first round picks. Now you look at it now and you go, would you rather have Jalen Ramsey, or would you rather have whatever draft pick was made last year? I don't even remember who it ended up being that Jacksonville took. And then would you rather have the number, what would the Rams pick this year? 27th or 28th, something like that?
Right.
Would you rather have those two guys, or would you rather have Jalen Ramsey? I'd rather have Jalen Ramsey. And that's the bet that the Rams really make is, yeah, we could get somebody okay at 25 or 26. You know, yeah, there's somebody who could you know, come into the rotation and help us out. Or we can use that capital to get somebody who is really going to make a difference. And this is now, it's absolutely a trend for Les Snead. And I think it's fascinating. And Jordan, I hope I've left you enough runway here to explain a little bit more about it. Just how they kind of view these picks. I know there's a meme going around that that explains it a little bit more directly. But it's really kind of what value you can get out of those picks, either by drafting a player or by trading them.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Yeah, and again, like, when I communicate this, like, I'm not saying it's the right thing or the wrong thing. It's how they, like, my job is to communicate what they are thinking, right? And how they are doing things from their from their perspective, and parse it and be fair and analyze it fairly, but also, like, to communicate why they are doing what they're doing. So the understanding that I have is that they don't see tangible proof over a large body of data, and certainly with their own first round picks in the past, however many decades ago they were, you know, that the first a sort of mid-level, you know, outside the top 12 first round pick, all the way into the window of a middle, maybe upper middle second round pick, is going to give them a tangible development return on investment in the same way that a proven player would, who was a top 10 pick, who is a Pro Bowler, who is a All Pro, who is a plays a position of heavy investment. Like if they, like, let's say, you know, the option is, okay, well, will you trade for a running back who was a top 10 pick? No, it's not this in terms of how they value positions, defensive line, slash edge rusher, slash anything Aaron Donald can do, corner, quarterback, receiver in some ways, but especially if they can block, you know, left tackle. You know, it's those are the value positions, the high value positions, right? So these are the ones that they are willing to give up those picks to invest in, because they know that the proven body of work and the proven predictive modeling of that player's continued development is more substantial to them in their evaluation than the unknown of a first round pick and whether that first round pick can play up to that status.
Right.
Obviously, if you are not drafting in the first round, you technically save money every year via signing bonuses, via the long-term contract you ultimately have to hand out if that pick is playing even near the level that he should be playing at. And so it's an interesting reassignment of value and reassignment of investment, because now they are okay with trading those picks away to bring in young guys who are going to have an impact immediately on their offense or their defense, and then solidifying these core roster pieces that we talked about earlier via contract, via long-term contract, and then building around them in rounds 2 through 6 in the draft, and drafting well. That strategy does not work if you don't have the right people in your personnel department who can evaluate and identify talent. And again, it's a small sample size of this being successful. But over the last 2 seasons, I would argue that this model has worked. And especially last season, I would argue that this model has worked, because you look at the guys who were key contributors and starters who were relative, you know, definitely all outside the first round, some even as low as undrafted free agent in the case of Darius Williams. And the talent identification process brought them in, and then it marries to the coaching process of talent development and player development, right? So all of these things, you have to assume that all of these things will continue to work together in sync in order for this to work. And in that way, you feel more comfortable hedging your bets on this model. This is the model that they're stuck with it, right? So they believe that it works because they're stuck with it through 2024. They don't have another first round pick until 2025, unless they trade back up for one. And they probably won't, because of that very meme that you mentioned. You know, and yeah. By the way, I did get confirmation. Les Snead has seen that meme. So
I thought he created it. Are we sure that he didn't put it out there?
I cannot I cannot share further findings on said meme, but
okay,
he has seen it. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. And yeah, I think the only thing I don't like about that is just having to give up another pick. I mean, it feels like, and again, we don't know a lot of what the negotiations were or what have you, but it does kind of seem like the Rams, you know, put in another second round, or excuse me, another first round pick, so that they could get rid of that Jared Goff contract, which again kind of circles back to me is like, well, now you're paying for a mistake that you made,
right? And they should wear that. They should. I mean, that mm-hmm. that was a bad contract to give out at that time.
Yeah.
It could have been if he would have continued to progress, and progress and regress again, because we were talking about this doesn't happen in a vacuum. So
right.
We need new words. But like, if he would have continued on the track that they had expected him to continue on, or that they seem to have expected him to continue on by value of actually giving him that contract, then, you know, maybe it works out better. But in this case, you have to pay for your mistakes. And they were like gritting their teeth and handing over that extra first round pick. And that was an offer that sources told me the Lions had 8 offers on the table for Matt Stafford. The Rams, every one of those teams offered a 2021 first round pick.
Right.
The Rams did not have a 2021 first round pick. So they said, take our 2.
Right.
And also a side note, will you take on this contract?
Right.
And that's what sweetened it. It really was.
Right. And they did what they had to do. You know, I get it. I don't like giving up that extra one. But it's what they needed to do. And yeah, it's the model that they have and it's worked. And the other thing I don't think we have been on the podcast since the Detroit Lions hired Brad Holmes. And you know, first of all, congrats to him. I know you got to know him a little bit too over the last year, and certainly a very talented man who has put in so much work with the Rams. I mean, started out as a public relations intern, I think, and worked his way up and just had a huge hand in the Rams' success here, especially over the last few seasons. So great for him. And the other thing that the Rams get from that is part of some of the new NFL policies, I guess, to encourage diversity hiring and things of that nature, is they get a couple draft picks, they get a couple third round draft picks in exchange. And those are, honestly, Jordan, I mean, the Rams have done more with their third round picks than some teams have done with their first round picks. And I don't think that's to be discounted. The first round picks get a lot of attention. They're the highlight players. They're the ones you see, putting the hat on and putting the jersey on or whatever. But a lot of times what really makes or breaks your team is what you do in those middle rounds, those second, third, and fourth rounds. And that's where, Les Snead and his staff have really made their hay over the last few years is identifying those players, even like you said, Jordan, down to the sixth round or even down to undrafted free agents. That's really where the difference is made between a good draft and a great draft. And the Rams have done that, and they're just going to have to continue to do it. I think that's pretty much the only way to say it.
Yeah. And I mean, they're all in. They are. Yeah. If it doesn't work, we're probably looking at a couple of new members of this franchise. If it doesn't work by 2024, just because they're all in. And again, though, they've done this collectively. This isn't like Sean McVay saying, F them picks, like the meme says. This is everybody. All of these guys in the front office are together on this model. And I think that's where some of this stuff about Jared is kind of getting lost in sort of all of the sensationalist parts of this and the, he's hurt feelings and poor baby and all this stuff. And it's like, I don't ever like to see a player feel hurt by the way that he has been treated, whether or not that's the case. I don't ever like to see teams, treat players as commodities instead of people. But in terms of the hierarchy, there was no question that this was going to be the priority hierarchy was never going to be Sean McVay's relationship with Jared Goff, no matter how glowingly he spoke of him 17 months ago, no matter how, how many think pieces you saw on that topic. It was always going to be the hierarchy of the partnership of Sean McVay, Les Snead, Kevin Demoff, Tony Pastores, a couple other people in that front office and on that coaching staff. And that was always going to take precedence. And they were always going to move swiftly and without, you saw it. You saw it with the girly stuff. Like, once it happened, it happened. That was it. And so that's something, again, that's something Jared Goff is aware of, has been aware of his situation for quite some time now. And, I think that there's so much gray area. There are so many things that, again, I kind of covered in this column, where it's like there were certain points of the season where you have to come out and criticize the quarterback, because otherwise if you don't, you're telling the rest of the guys in your locker room that you are giving this guy preferential treatment. And if they're already frustrated with the way that the season's going in terms of the offense being the ninth most inconsistent offense in the NFL this season and number 18 in scoring, and the defense is on the field for an ungodly amount of time, and you're frustrated, then what does that say if you don't criticize the quarterback? At that point, and things aren't getting fixed and you're having these private conversations and, you are the quarterback and you're publicly commenting about how you're not thrilled that you were, sat instead of, even because you think your thumb is fine, but the coach disagreed and you guys are going to agree to disagree and all of that stuff. Like, there, Jared Goff has been, and especially his representation, because he's got great representation. He got a contract a year early. They've been aware of this situation. They have been fully aware of the breadth of this situation. And it's not like a you know, contentious split, I would say.
Right.
It's just cold because it's a business.
Yeah.
And I put it in another column, a pile, these guys, they'll throw around this money and pull it out of the mattress and what have you. Like this Rams front office, they'll throw bags of money around like they can print it.
Right.
But it's not a promise. It's just a pile of money.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I'd take the pile of money though.
Yeah. I mean, you don't have to make me any promises. You can just give me some money.
Yeah, no, I'm good. Yeah. I'm good with the pile of money, actually. Fascinating stuff, Jordan. And I know this is going to continue on and you know, like you said to start, this is not an official trade yet. So when people start looking at some of the salary cap, things like that, the Rams don't have to reconcile all of that until the start of the calendar year, or excuse me, the start of the NFL league year. So that'll be sometime in mid-March. I think it's usually around the 15th or 17th of March when that happens. So that's when we'll learn a little bit more. And then that's when maybe you'll see that contract extension for Matthew Stafford that you hinted at, because that'll help kind of balance out those salary cap hits and maybe cushion the blow a little bit for some of what the Rams are going to have to go through this offseason. So, Jordan, you've done an extraordinary job of covering this story to date, and I know that more interesting angles will be coming down the line, hopefully not on Saturday evenings, but I know that if
birthday.
They do. All right. Yes, Jordan, that's right. Jordan had her birthday on Friday. So, and even wrote and even broke news that day on Friday. So it's been a busy, I'm sure it's exactly how you envisioned spending your birthday when you moved out here, is in quarantine, writing news stories. That I'm sure that's exactly what you had in mind, right?
Yes. Including, including trades and trade discussions and not having seen another human being in several weeks now.
Yeah. It's the
all
stuff
of that.
Dreams, really.
All of
yeah,
that. Yeah.
Yeah. Happy birthday.
Thank you, Rich. And it's just been, you know, it's been really interesting. Again, like I know that the takes are flowing and the news cycle is coming to drown us all. And like, it's going to be a trip, guys. But, you know, stay the course. We'll try to bring you everything we know to the best of our knowledge. We'll try to be right down the middle with it and try to bring you some context with all of these decisions to the best of our ability. I know that one of the things I get the most excited about is to learn stuff and then communicate stuff to you guys. So, but I have to learn it first. So thanks for bearing with me in that regard. Yeah, Rich, it's crazy. You know, we're going to be doing these podcasts every couple of weeks. The next time we do this podcast, we will have spoken to new defensive coordinator Raheem Morris, who I can't wait to talk about because I think he's a really great fit for this program. But again, there was a lot of gray area leading up to this decision, and definitely can't wait to cover that on our next episode. And also, the Rams have two special teams coaches now.
Yes.
Technically three. I think Torrey Woodbury is a very underrated. He's a
That's
special
right.
teams assistant. He's very, very underrated. I think he's going to be a fast riser in this league. But Joe DeCamillis, I might be mispronouncing that because I haven't met the guy yet. So.
Right.
And John Bonamigo moving into a senior consulting role. So it's going to be really interesting. They are expected to speak with us after the Super Bowl, because Sean McVay generally gives his staff the first, you know, the last 2 weeks of January or so off. So they're expected to make introductions with us in the next week or so. And so then we'll be excited to bring you guys updates from that. And in the meantime, you guys got to check out this column. Got to check out our great Athletic Detroit coverage. Chris Burke and Nick Baumgartner do a great job. They're also they're cranking the clips out. If you are interested in seeing, you know, hearing more about Jared Goff's future, Brad Holmes, Aubrey Pleasant, who is now a Detroit Lion as well, Ray Agnew, guys that are really trying to build something over there, definitely check those guys out. And as always, you can subscribe through the 11 Personnel Podcast. And what do you get when you do?
You get a great discount to celebrate Jordan's birthday.
Yes. I love a great discount, especially near this gray void of a birthday that I have just celebrated.
Make Jordan's birthday a little bit brighter and subscribe to The Athletic. I couldn't agree with you more, Jordan. And it, like I said, we're just getting started. I know we have plans to kind of do some collaboration with the Detroit team, and you know, what are the Rams getting in Matthew Stafford? So there's going to be a lot of good stuff to come.
Can't wait, guys. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening as usual. We're really excited about this offseason with you all, and we'll catch you next time.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.